Hello and welcome. I'm Andrea Gilders, APSCA's Membership Manager, and you're listening to the APSCA Podcast.
Hi, my name is Emma Youngman, the Data and Compliance Coordinator here at APSCA, and today I'm joined with Alex Nazza, APSCA's Director of Code and Compliance. We're going to discuss the ethics and integrity side of APSCA. The focus today is going to be on the substantiation gap, particularly between firms, collaborative programs, and APSCA. So thank you for joining us, Alex.
Hi, Emma. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
To begin with, can you please explain what we mean by the substantiation gap?
Absolutely. So substantiation gap is a term we use to refer to the difference in thresholds required for disciplinary action or termination by member firms, collaborative programs, and APSCA when it comes to disciplining or sanctioning auditors for misconduct.
Okay, and why is there a substantiation gap?
That's a great question. In a nutshell, it's because these three different types of organizations, member firms, collaborative programs, and APSCA, play very different roles in the industry. And the sanctions that they would implement against a member auditor, for example, have very different implications. So, for example, for an auditor to have their contract terminated with a member firm is very different and has very different implications and a very different process. And as we're discussing, a very different threshold of evidence than APSCA on the other end of the spectrum to terminate membership for a member auditor. And that's because as an employer, a member firm can terminate employment with an auditor and they can move on to another employer. And they have a lot more discretion in terminating employment. And it doesn't necessarily have to be for a disciplinary issue. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be over an APSCA code violation. These may play into it. They may be aspects of it, but that's not really a requirement necessarily. Now for APSCA, what our membership means for a member auditor is their basic qualification to practice social compliance auditing, to be engaged in this industry as an auditor, regardless of employer, regardless of collaborative program. If they do not have an APSCA membership, they will, with almost no exceptions, be prevented from practicing as a social compliance auditor. And to the extent there are exceptions, it's the type that would prove the rule, so to speak. Right. So that's really the reason, is there are different roles that we play.
Okay. It might be helpful here to outline the disciplinary process of APSCA from when the ethics team receives an allegation all the way through to how it's investigated and a report is put together for the disciplinary board. Can you outline that a little bit?
Absolutely. So our disciplinary process is independent to that of member firms and collaborative programs. So when we receive an allegation from a member firm or a collaborative program or somebody else, another member auditor, somebody else in the market who's become aware of a code violation, when we receive that, we open a case and we begin an investigation without any assumptions. We review the evidence and information we're provided, and we conduct a thorough investigative process and ultimately prepare the ethics team, which Emma, you and I work together on. We prepare a report for the disciplinary board. Now, this report does not include recommendations. We are not a part of that decision by design. The purpose of this report is to objectively and clearly summarize the evidence and information that we've received in relation to this case, and provide that to the disciplinary board so that they can make a decision. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what that process involves, what our process involves, but first just to talk about that ultimate decision-making process by the disciplinary board. That's an independent process. And what we mean by that, how we kind of define it as independent, if you review our disciplinary framework and procedures, which is on the ethics page of the APSCA website, the board members are independent. Two are firm representatives. One is stakeholder representative, which means from a brand, essentially. And the other is somebody with a background in legal or a related profession who also has relevant context involved. So by design, this is an independently appointed board. None of them work for APSCA. And there are conflict checks done prior to any case to ensure that none of them have any potential conflicts that they may need to, that may be relevant to the decision. Now, in addition to that, they don't know who the member auditors are. It's anonymized. They don't know who the member auditors are, and they don't know who the member firms are referenced in a report. So they really are in a position to make a decision based purely on the merits of the evidence and information provided to them. Now, our process in preparing all of that thus needs to be fairly robust. And they require that of us. The disciplinary board asks a lot of questions and requires a very clear description of what's going on and evidence that is fairly direct and has been verified. So what we do initially when we receive a case is we will connect, of course, with the person making the complaint, get any additional detail and evidence from them as we may need. We will connect with the subject of the complaint, whether that's an auditor or a firm. Today, we're primarily talking about auditor cases in talking about the substantiation gap. And we'll connect with them. We will give them opportunity to respond to the allegations and to provide any evidence or information that may be relevant to us. They also have an opportunity at the end of the process to present directly to the board. And then we'll seek additional information and context and evidence as we can. We'll go back to the member firm, seek additional confirmation if we've received information from a member auditor. We maybe do some open source research to confirm certain details. There may be other individuals or collaborative programs or brands or parties that have relevant details. And assuming we can, obviously we have, there are various things we have to think about in terms of privacy and confidentiality, but as we can, according in keeping with those various policies, we would connect with various parties involved who may have information and evidence. We will gather that evidence. We will prepare our report. Sometimes we'll speak to the auditor more than once. We'll probably speak to the firm or have emails with them often once or maybe more. And then we present this to the disciplinary board, who ultimately makes that decision.
So if an auditor resigns, if we receive an allegation from a member firm who has resigned throughout the firm's investigation, do you still investigate it?
If an auditor has resigned during a member firm's investigation, it depends on whether they resigned while there was an investigation into a potential code violation open, or whether there was just any sort of allegation or potential code violation that the member firm was aware of. So in those cases, which essentially boils down to if there was a code violation or a suspected code violation, the answer is yes. Now, member firms may only investigate to a point where it relates to a former employee, because it's no longer relevant to them. However, they continue to be a member for us, so it continues to be relevant for us. And of course, if member firms could, or member auditors rather, could simply dispel with any dismiss any allegations simply by changing an employer, that would be an issue for the industry. So we will continue to investigate. We generally continue to work with the member firms and reach out to the subject auditor as we would normally, where member firms may not have done as much of an investigation, depending on the circumstances of the auditor's departure, they will cooperate and provide us with the information they have so that we can complete ours. They're required to under the code, although we're lucky to have a very collaborative group of members who tend to support us in our investigative work. Then we'll prepare a report as normal and present it to the board.
Right. So you have, on one hand, an auditor that resigns throughout the investigation, and on the other hand, auditors that have been terminated from their firm, and the firm is handing that information over to us for us then to take it to the disciplinary board. Mm-hmm. And in what cases then, if they've done a thorough investigation, handed it to the ethics team of APSCA, and it doesn't make it to the disciplinary board, or the disciplinary board, it makes it to the disciplinary board and the board decides that that's unsubstantiated, why is there that gap?
Generally, that happens when the evidence may be, from our perspective, circumstantial, in terms of the degree to which there is a code violation, as we define it. Now, it does not mean that we do not agree with the member firm's findings or that we in any way dispute them. It simply means that we may not have been able to reach the same conclusion under our process, which runs parallel. It's not contingent upon or directly related to a member firm process. We were not able to reach the same conclusion that they were. And that there's situations where that happens because maybe there was a range of issues for which a member auditor was dismissed. This is one scenario. One of them was some sort of ethical misconduct, which may have been substantiated to a degree, but maybe there were a lot of other issues which violated other of those firm policies, which do not relate to APSCA, the APSCA code. Maybe there was an interpersonal aspect to it, and they were terminated for sort of this plethora of reasons, and then it comes to us. We look specifically at APSCA code violations, and we may not reach the same conclusion. Another type is where the member firm reached a conclusion through their process that there was a code violation. Now, we do not, again, we do not dispute that in most cases. There may be cases that we do. We certainly do pay attention to how member firms are conducting their investigations. They are required under the code to be conducted independently. But in cases where we simply can't reach the same conclusion, it's not due in general to any sort of fault with the member firm's process necessarily, but can just be that under our process, which is by design more robust as sort of the qualification that allows member auditors to be in the industry full stop, that we may not, it may not result in any sanction from APSCA.
Right. Is there anything else that you would like to add regarding the substantiation gap?
Well, I just would like to reinforce to everybody that our process is by design a very transparent, a very robust, and a very thorough process to the extent that it can be. And you have to understand there's limitations on the information we have and the evidence we have access to. Particularly as we're not an employer of these member auditors. We're usually not directly involved or party to the issues that transpire, so we don't necessarily have a lot of direct access to information. But to the extent that we do, our process is very transparent, independent, and fair. So for member auditors going through this process and member firms, it really is generally best to cooperate with and respond to that. And what I mean by best is that will ensure that the disciplinary board is able to understand your view, your response, and is able to view and review any evidence you have, and even hear any complaints you might have, and take that into account. Now, on the flip side of that is, if there is no response, if there is zero response, no response whatsoever, that is actually generally viewed as a failure to live up to the responsibilities that members have in the code, which does require response and cooperation with regards to an ethics team investigation. But it will also simply result in less evidence and less of the subject of the process's side of the story being reviewed by the disciplinary board. Now, obviously, the outcome is going to be a result of that process. And there's no, as you know, Emma, I have no say in the outcome, and neither do you by design. So we can't sort of make any determinations or recommendations on how certain types of cooperation or involvement in our process may result in any type of a sort of a decision. There's simply nothing we can say about that. But certainly in terms of ensuring that your information is presented to the disciplinary board, the more you respond and the more information you provide to us, the better.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time today, Alex, and explaining the substantiation gap to us.
Thank you, Emma. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the APSCA podcast. For more information on APSCA membership, exams, and our other activities, please visit our website at theapsca.org.